From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Well, look out. Some of the Russians are out to steal your money in your bank account. Criminal gangs are plotting a $1 billion cyber heist on global financial institutions. Europol has warned as they ratchet up the pressure on banks reeling from the record-breaking hit on JP Morgan Chase. Secret listening on internet chat rooms by the European police investigative body has discovered planning by sophisticated Russian cyber criminals aimed at pulling off one massive hit on a bank. Let's hope it's not yours. Sears said it was the victim of a cyber attack that likely resulted in the theft of some customer payment cards at its Kmart stores. The latest in a series of computer security breaches to hit U.S. companies and dealing a fresh blow to the struggling U.S. retailer. The number of deaths attributed now to the Ebola outbreak has risen above 4,000. The latest figures show there are 4,024 confirmed or suspected deaths in the worst affected West African nations of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. 8 deaths are linked to the fever in Nigeria, 1 obviously in the United States. In total, 8,300 confirmed or suspected cases, mostly in West Africa. But what does that mean to us here? Let's check in with Christian Wild, who has taken it upon himself to research this incredible story. Christian, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, yeah, George, many years ago when they were first talking about the AIDS virus, I got involved and did a lot of research and writing because at that time, no one really knew anything about it. And the same questions that you have today regarding the Ebola were the same ones being raised as far as how could it be transmitted, could it carry through the air, and that was what we were worried about back then as we are today. Now, the Ebola virus is on the move, and as long as air flights are departing to other countries from Africa, the risk for transmission is very real. So if our government has ordered the purchase of 160,000 hazmat suits, and is spending a reported $750 million to combat Ebola, what are you and I to believe? Spain just announced its first case as a nurse was diagnosed and 7 others are quarantined, with 80 additional people with whom the nurse might have had some kind of contact with are currently being monitored for symptoms. George, let me try to put this outbreak in perspective.
Sure.
At the height of the AIDS epidemic in 2005, 2.2 million people died of the virus. By comparison, the predictions of deaths from Ebola in Sierra Leone for just the next 120 days are already predicted to be 1.4 million deaths. So in spite of comforting comments from the government and leaders from the CDC and the World Health Organization, every one of those directors has left open the possibility in their discussions with the press that there is a potential for this virus to mutate and go airborne. And if it does, heaven help us.
You got that.
We know that. We already know science has never been able to contain or control the virus that is the common cold, and aren't AIDS and hepatitis C also viruses? They have a history of being extremely resistant to therapy. And we will know a lot more in the next month of what we're actually dealing with. Just remember, no matter what they tell us, the jury is still out. But one positive thing I will leave you and your listeners with is the AIDS virus did not go airborne as it was feared 33 years ago.
Thanks a lot. Christian's website, myheartbook.com. You can also call him at 866-STEM-123. If you've ever been on a plane and the person in front of you reclines his seat all the way back, it is a hassle. Well, the Haitian man who authorities say got into a heated dispute on board a flight from Miami to Paris over a reclining seat. Can you imagine flying from Miami to Paris and somebody's reclined his seat all the way back on you? Well, he's been charged with assaulting a flight attendant. 17 military transport planes bought by the United States government for the Afghan Air Force at a cost of nearly $500 million, you paid for it, recently destroyed by the Afghan military and sold for scrap parts at 6 cents a pound. That's unbelievable. You know, a long time ago during the hockey era, the early part, there were six major teams. And of course, as you know, I grew up in Detroit watching the great Gordie Howe. And obviously, of course, in Chicago, whenever we played, it was the great Bobby Hull. So I'm at a restaurant a couple months ago in St. Louis, one of my favorite spots, Cafe Napoli, and a dear friend of mine, Don Sorensen, heads up the Mercy Hospital chain in St. Louis, and he's having dinner with none other than Bobby Hull. And Bobby, I got to tell you, that was one of the greatest moments of my life, meeting you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And it's amazing, your show, George. Brings out the best and the worst in of America, and I'm just flabbergasted at the what I hear from people that your guests that you have on the show.
Oh, it is truly amazing.
I was with some great people that night, and of course, Brett Hull knows. Anybody and
great
everybody
guy.
That is anybody in St. Louis, and it was a wonderful evening, and it was great to see you. I'm happy to be able to talk to you again.
I've gotten to know Brett real well in his move back to St. Louis. Just what a delightful guy. When he was a little boy, Bobby, did you train him? Did he skate when he was a little kid and stuff like that?
His two older brothers, Bobby and Blake, had skates on when they were 2 years old. Brett Hull was six or seven before I could trick him into putting skates on.
I love it.
He wanted to run up and down the ice and play with everybody, but he didn't want to put skates on.
Well, I used to watch you, and not that I'm that young, believe me, but I used to watch you when you would play at the Olympia. Gordie Howe was there. You were there with the Blackhawks. Just an amazing thing. Weren't you one of the first guys to decide, I'm going to bend my hockey stick a little bit?
I wasn't the first guy. I would like to say this too, George, that some of the greatest games I ever played in was right there at the old Olympia playing against Gordie Howe, across the red line and blue lines from him. We played head on head, and we just tried to outplay one another. And that's why you saw the best in likely both of us. But Stan Mikita tried to break his Northland pro hockey stick, and he wasn't heavy enough, or the stick was too lithe and willowy for him to be able to break it, and he grabbed it in the door of our bench, tried to break it that way. The blade split. He still tried to break it, and when the stick came out of the door, there was a big wow in the blade.
Yeah.
And it split down the middle, and half the bottom half had the wow in it, where you would shoot the puck from. And I saw him go to get a new stick. And before he did, he was rifling pucks into the net. And finally gets a new stick, and he came back. And I said, what in the name of blue?
Blankety blank.
were you trying to prove? Whacking those pucks in the net with that broken stick. He said, Bobby, when I tried to break it, I put a heck of a wow in the blade. Can you ever shoot the puck with that hook? Well, it was the combination of the stick being thin. I don't know whether you ever played a lot of road hockey or not, but you play road hockey until your stick got very thin.
That's right.
Like the width of a puck. And then when you'd go on the ice with the puck, you could really shoot the puck. So it was the combination of the blade being narrow and the hook and the stick. And he said, can you ever shoot the puck with that hook in that blade? And he said, after practice, I'm going to call Northland and order a half a dozen with a hook in the blade. I said, well, while you're at it, order me a half a dozen, only just hook them the other way. And That's how it all got started.
And then you went on to score more goals than just about anybody during that time period. I got to ask you one last quick question, Bobby. When you left the NHL and went to the World Hockey Association, and they basically said, all right, what is it going to take? You threw out a figure, I'm told, of $1 million, which was unheard of. And all the owners of the WHA got together and they said, give it to him. We need him. We need him in this league. Is that true?
That's just exactly how it happened. And, had I known they were going to try to raise the money, I would have said $20
million. They might have come up with it.
Well, not only that, but I didn't want to leave Chicago, greatest city in the world, next to L.A. And I just didn't want to leave. And I thought $1 million would be enough to dissuade them from courting me, the continuance of the court. And as it happened, as you said, the 9 different owners got together and ended up $110,000 each, and they gave me the $1 million, and I was the first million dollar athlete of any kind, either two-legged or four-legged.
And that was in 1972 money. So today,
1972 is right.
That's amazing. Well, Bobby, thanks for being on the show. I'll look forward to running into you wherever you are. Bobby's website, by the way, Bobby Hall, H-U-L-L, Bobby Hall, thegoldenjet.com, because that's what they used to call him, the Golden Jet, the living legend in hockey and really in this country. Really a treat. A child remains in critical condition after surviving a fall into a jaguar exhibit at the Little Rock Zoo in Arkansas. Witnesses say screams for help rang out loudly after the little 3-year-old boy slipped through the exhibit rail feet first, plummeting into the cat pit. The child was with his father and grandfather at the time of the incident. The father of the child told police he was leaning over the rail in an attempt to take a photograph of the animals and observed his son's feet go over the rail out of his vision. The child's grandfather says the little boy fell about 15 feet. 2 jaguars in the enclosure then attacked the little boy. The black cat had bit the child on the foot. The yellow jaguar bit the clothing near the neck area. Fire extinguishers were used to push those cats away, while a zookeeper, this is how brave he is, or she, lowered a ladder, climbed into the cat pit, and grabbed the little kid. Amazing. The kid is alive. In Tanzania, 7 people accused of witchcraft have been burned alive there, adding that they have arrested 23 people in connection with those crimes. Let's see what's up in the skies these days and check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you got?
Well, good evening, George. I always look forward to these Friday presentations. A lot's going on. Boy, thank heavens Ebola hasn't gone airborne, but it seems that everything else has gone airborne this week. Lots of reports. We just posted about 220 reports to our website, UFOcenter.com, that have come to us just in the last 7 days. But before I get into current reports, I'd like to clear up a couple small points of old business. We posted, about a half a dozen reports for sightings on the evening of September 2nd of this year. I think that was a Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. And I'd like to give public credit to Mr. Ted Molshan, I think his name is pronounced, veteran satellite observer who put pieces together on our behalf and has pointed out that the object that was reported by, probably half a dozen people or so from Colorado, South Dakota, I think from Kansas as well, were probably looking at a fragment of the Cosmos 2495 satellite that landed out in Kazakhstan earlier that day. My gratitude to Ted and my compliments to him for some excellent, excellent sleuthing. One of the rare occasions when we're able to really explain away what happened, George. Also, other point of old business, you may recall 2 weeks ago I reported about a very dramatic sighting in Hawaii.
Yes.
In Haleakala, I think it's pronounced, and had little scare after that report. People were reporting to me that it might have been related to a missile launch over the Pacific anti-ballistic missile range, but it turns out that that's not the case. The times were wrong, And as a result of that report 2 weeks ago, we've received other reports from other witnesses who apparently saw the same thing. With regard to newer reports, I have talked about cases in which electromagnetic interference was reported by some of the witnesses. We just had one of those very dramatic reports from 3 nights ago, October 7th. A grandmother from Gainesville, Texas, reports that at about 11:05 on Tuesday night this week, 11:05 p.m. that is, the lights in Gainesville, Texas, at least in her area of the city, went dark. The power went off. And she called the police. The police told her they thought it was an accident on a nearby intersection. So she went outside. She didn't hear much, couldn't see any activity with regard to investigation of that accident. The lights went off again at 11:40, 35 minutes after the first failure. And then some of her neighbors looked up in the northern sky from their vantage point, and they saw a gigantic triangular craft, they report, hovering in the night sky. It rotated and slowly drifted to the south. When it went out of their sight, all of the lights came on. A very, very interesting case, which is now posted to our website. Tonight, another interesting case of those red fireballs, this time from Shirley, New York, George. A very nice report from a couple who saw two of these objects. It's significant that they saw these things at a time when there was heavy rain in the sky. My suspicion is people would not be launching so-called Chinese lanterns or sky lanterns in a heavy rainstorm. The objects just seemed to ascend and disappear from their sight. They punched through the solid cloud.
I love that scene. I bet that was exciting to see.
Very dramatic sighting.
Peter, I'm going to look forward to seeing you in a few weeks in Toronto. I can't believe we're going through the middle of October already.
Time is going fast, and I'm looking forward to that immensely myself. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a first time for me to be sitting on a stage talking about UFOs with a radio talk show host. So this is going to be a new one for me, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I might get you to stand up and sing a cappella for
God
a while.
God help us.
Here we go. See you later, Peter. Up next, we're going to be talking about curses, all kinds of curses. Linda Salvin joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. There's something so special about Friday night into Saturday mornings. Now, Linda Salvin, she's been on with me before some time ago, 17-year radio host, metaphysician. Linda was not born with psychic gifts. A lot of people are. A series of devastating accidents transformed her life. With each of these experiences, that spiritual connection to the universe, whatever's out there, and her psychic gifts began to grow. Spiritual awakenings resulted from a plane crash, a fire truck, and other near-death experiences with the so-called white light, causing her to seek out ways to integrate her education and experiences to help others on a new holistic and metaphysical path, which she has been doing. We're going to talk with her tonight for several hours about curses, who gets cursed, and why. And she also wants to talk a little bit about the Ouija board. Linda Salvin back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Hiya, George. Thank you for that nice introduction. It's nice to be back.
I'm looking forward to this. And we're going to have quite a night with you tonight. And this is a special month. You know, this Halloween season, when we get going into this, it's just got a certain feel to it, doesn't it?
It does. It's the fall. It's eerie. It's ghosts and goblins and things you can't understand or explain. And it's also taking us right into the wonderful season of Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas, where we're all very grateful for what we have. So it's kind of fun right now to be at this end of it, especially with the seasons changing.
What have you been doing since the 5 years you were last on with us?
I was on 3 months ago.
Well, I mean, but the big show was 5 years ago.
No, it was 3 years ago.
I have 2009.
I know
you were on in July.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah,
the big show back 5 years ago. What have you been doing since then?
Okay. I've been doing my own radio show, which I stopped doing about a year ago because I'm just doing guest spots right now because I'm busy promoting my candle and wicks of wisdom. I still do private consultations with my clients for readings, healings, and channeling sessions, teaching people spirituality and metaphysics. And I'm starting production actually until about a week and a half on my own cable TV show.
Well, you had mentioned a little bit about that when you were on with me in July.
It's becoming real.
So it's happening.
It's happening. It's going to be Dr. Linda, and we're just going to call it Dr. Linda. It's based on my old radio show from the 90s, which was the Starlight Cafe, where I did very much like what you do with all different metaphysics.
That's exciting. Let's talk a little bit more about that, Linda, when we come back. I'm George Norrie, Linda Salvin with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Salvin with us. We're going to talk about some of the incredible things she's been doing since the last 5 years she was with us, and just recently as her programs and things that she's doing are really starting to reach fruition. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll talk about curses with her. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Salvin with us. Linda, so tell us more about the program, and how did this all fall together?
Well, back in June of this year, somebody on LinkedIn, you know, one of the social websites, media websites, contacted me as a healer and wanted to know if I wanted to participate in one of their shows that they were doing for a new cable network. So I agreed, and when I was there, me being an opportunist and a Capricorn, I thought, you know, they've got something going here. When I understood that they were starting a new cable system, a whole new network is launching in a few months, and that they were developing programming. So I figured I would pitch my show that I've been soliciting and trying to talk for the longest time. I could, you know, why not? How is anybody going to know? And it finally got picked up. They liked the content. It's a talk show where, let's say, a friend of mine who was very left brain into the business world had an awakening, became a shaman. So I'm bringing him on as a shaman. I'm bringing a Catholic theosis on who I've known for many years in my line of work, where you wouldn't think it Catholic theosis and a psychic would get along, but he understands my concept of God, and he has been on my show, and he's willing to come in to talk about what he does religiously and how it ties in spiritually. So it's going to have a spiritual thread throughout the whole theme, and the goal is to educate and make people aware, but have a lot of fun with it.
Super. Can you announce yet what venue where people can find you?
It will be, I can't give the name of the network yet, but I do know that they're under contract with at least two systems, which is Verizon and the Dish network so far.
Great.
And, you know, little by little, they acquire more networks.
That's right. It'll grow. Well, good for you.
All right. I got my feet wet.
If we can help you in any way, let us know, okay?
I'll bring you on the show.
I'll come on as a guest. I'd love to do that. We'll pop
okay.
on. That'll be neat. Where will you be taping out of?
Right here in the Valley.
Really? Okay, yes. Perfect.
Right,
we won't have far to go.
No.
All right, curses. Let's talk about curses. First of all, why would someone want to put a curse on somebody else?
Jealousy and competition. People are so jealous of other people's successes, beauty, love life, career, finances, even politically, I wouldn't doubt, but I'm not going to say that I know for sure, that somebody can tamper with politics. Why should I say something like that?
Well, it's probably true.
Oh, but I don't want to be the one to admit it. There's ways to tamper with people's luck, and I'm a fatalist. I believe in fate. I believe that with faith we can acquire everything, because I learned that through the plane crash and the healing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who are vindictive, who are satanical, who are very into the negative aspects of witchcraft, because witchcraft is misconstrued. It's a craft. There's people that do the rituals, but there's also very positive work that's done. It's the negative where people can really, you know, have the rug pulled from underneath them. And I have seen it among people. I have witnessed it as a person, where I had a curse placed on me that took a long time to break through. The person actually had to pass away in order for it to be lifted.
Why can't you, as a person, why can't you block the curse?
I don't know that we see it coming, nor do we understand the energy at times. And sometimes, as a psychic and a healer, George, I protect myself. I have to, because I've got so many negative people coming after me, you know, on a daily basis with all their problems, or some of them have a bone to pick or whatever. And I'm only a human being like you and everybody else. And I'm not out to be malicious. I'm out to help. But there's those like the dark force that want to see the light get put out.
Yeah.
There are entities that can be attached to our auras. There are entities that I think people can literally kind of like throw on others, whether it's using ritual, words, a lot of it comes in poetry. Sometimes it's through a certain type of command. It can be done with spells, candles, if it's done in the negative way. I think you can really offset people's mojo. And I know, even being here in the Valley, there was a large company that was in the metaphysical industry that knew enough to put some of the psychics on the boulevard out of business. When she started getting bigger, she got jealous. And a lot of people lost their shops in the 90s. I remember when that was happening, and I found out who was behind it. And I didn't believe in all this back then. I was very naive until I started dabbling in candle magic and taking my career to another level, which was scary for me because it's the unknown, and you hear so many negatives about it. But there's really people can curse. Not just verbally, like, I wish you dead, I wish you failure, but people do want hexes and jinxes and misfortune for others to make themselves look and feel better.
Now, there is called the generational family curses. Now,
yes.
I want you to explain that, but is that what happened to the Kennedy family?
That's a good example, because I was thinking about that before I came on the air tonight to bring up the Kennedys. That is such an example. I mean, look at the tragedy that we've all gone through. I don't even want to start, you know, where it all began or why. But I came up with the term generational family curses by looking at people like the Kennedys or anybody else that have had one thing after another go wrong. No matter how many times they stand up and face adversity, it's more than the average person would ever expect to have to deal with. So I have come to learn that, let's say, your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of 6-7 generations ago, of course, mm-hmm. you didn't know him, and it's on your father's side. I know your dad's deceased, but your dad's family, 7 generations ago, might have had an argument with somebody down the road.
Okay.
And that person down the road was going to curse the Nuri family because of that one bitter argument, and something may have happened that may have caused a domino effect throughout the generations as it's passed on through the genes, that the energy of the lineage is affected.
So why curse the entire family until the end of time? Why not just that person that you think wronged you?
Well, that's what I tried to figure out, and sometimes I wonder if what they used to do in the old days, maybe you and I in our past lives may have experienced it, because, you know, if I was born in 1954, I know I was alive in the 1200s and in the 1 AD. I've been around a long time as a soul.
I was your pool boy in another life.
That's who it was. I knew you looked familiar.
Yes.
You did a good job cleaning the bottom of the pool.
That's about all I did.
But, I think in those days, it was like a curse forever. I'm going to curse your family, but they didn't say where your family's going to end, so it was continuous. In my own family, and my mom passed 5.5 years ago, and I remember after having breakfast with my family, my dad and I were in the car, and we were at a red light up on Mulholland, and I said, the Zelensky curse is over. And he looked at me and goes, what do you mean? And I always felt, my mom used to say the family's cursed. There's 3 suicides. All the men in the family committed suicide in her family. So why would the men, my grandpa, my great uncle, and my uncle, commit suicide unless there was, not just from depression and not from all the anger, but there must have been something else going on that this soul circle of people couldn't survive. And I know that there were medical problems. I know there were psychological problems, but there must have been other, like most of them died in Auschwitz. The whole family died because of the war. There was something that this family wasn't supposed to go on. And I tried to look at it, like, where did it come from? But I can't do past life investigation to go back, you know, nine generations to see if there was a curse on this particular end of the family or other. But I do know from clients that come to me with certain conditions that are just not the norm, not just your normal dysfunction, but you can tell that something had been tampered. Mm-hmm. They come to me for help to break the chain or to break the curse or the hex or whatever you want to call it.
How do you start? How do you even break the curse? I mean, do you get an idea from the family on what the curse is, first of all?
Yeah, I can usually tell if it was more from a ritual versus a spell versus I hate the word witchcraft because I've learned enough about the beautiful sides of different Santeria, pagan, Wicca, Kabbalah, whatever.
Voodoo,
and even voodoo means health. I never knew it meant health. It's actually a positive word, but we've transformed it into something scary.
I think Hollywood has done that. As a matter of fact, I got to tell you a quick, great story about that. I was talking to a voodoo practitioner, and I said, where did this make a figurine and stick a pin in their heart come from? And she said, Hollywood did that to us. We didn't do that.
The voodoo doll came from Hollywood?
No, well, they used to have dolls of people, right? They would make, let's say, a Linda Salvin doll, and they would pin your name to the little doll. So it would say Linda Salvin. They'd stick a pin in a little piece of paper into the little figurine of you, and they would pray to the doll to make things work for you.
And that it's either to work or to work against you, which is what I was saying a few moments ago, that there's like poetry, there's commands, there's different rituals that can be positive or negative. There's ways to remove negativity, but it takes time. And then there's times where that prayer is probably the most powerful, of course, when you've got God in the light. That is the most powerful savior. But then there's times you're still entrapped in so much of the negative force or curse or heaviness or obstacles, whatever you want to call it, that prayer is not enough. It's heard, but it's not powerful enough. When I found that I had been psychically attacked, I went to a Hasidic rabbi, and he suggested I go to Queens, New York, to the OL, which is where the Rebbe is buried. And I did, and I put my prayers into the OL and into the sanctuary, and I started to feel some relief, but not all of it. And then with my own candles, I was able to break some of it with the what I call good luck power, which it helps to diffuse hexes, negativity, curses, and obstacles, and a lot of the schmutz. I just call it schmutz.
Can the curse rub off on you, the curse that you're trying to eradicate from a family?
Sometimes, if I'm not protected properly, it can invade me, but it's not going to harm me.
Okay.
Kind of like a priest who does
an exorcism,
thank you, has to be protected because that spirit that he's exorcising from the inhabited individual could then jump over to him, and he doesn't want to be infected, quote unquote. You know, you got to be careful. But for the most part, I don't think I can inherit or catch a curse.
Can the person who initiates the curse, even years later, if they're alive, can they remove it?
I think they can remove it by unbinding whatever it is they've done, or if they go back and they remove it themselves through a ritual to apologize or to break what it did as an amends. I've seen that happen where the it's like a pole, and you can't bend a pole, but something will crack, and it finally breaks so that this negative, it's like being behind a negative membrane, no matter what you do, like the Kennedys, no matter what they did, everybody got hit.
They sure did. And it hasn't stopped.
No, even in the other
that family.
Of the kids coming up. But I mean, that's the easiest one to pinpoint because everybody's so aware of it. But I've helped people where they couldn't get a job, and they felt cursed. Some people feel that they're cursed in the financial world. Some people feel cursed in the love arena. Some people feel cursed in the whole family. Some people feel that their whole life is nothing but one big negative ball of schmutz. And a lot of times it's attitude. A lot of times it may be depression. It could be substance abuse. And then when I take away all of those factors as to what's going on, when I do an assessment, and then I ask about the family, well, my great uncle used to say, or my great uncle used to do blah, blah, blah. And then I trace it and I see where there could be what I call the generational curse because, oh, it came out from this generation on the mother's side and maybe filtered in during who knows what. But then we can trace it. And then it's just like with Ebola. It's the same kind of thing with the disease. You trace the source.
Yep.
You look for what needs to be done, and you do something to either stop it, prevent it, or find a cure to eradicate it.
Well, let me ask you this too, Linda, with these curses. When they're placed on, let's say, the family curse, we'll get into business curses next hour, but when they're placed on the family curses and they, you know, and they do their thing, what is it that's actually doing the pain or the suffering?
There's some type of energy, like some aren't allowed to have love in their life. You get real close to a relationship, and then the rug gets pulled. It's almost like an inability to have the joy or the comfort or the embracing of what life is really supposed to be about in a person's lifetime. And it's not necessarily verbal. It's more of a bubble. Like you can't, and like think of a membrane. Like you can't get out of the membrane, or think of a boxing rink, and somebody's inside the rink, and you can't get behind those bars, those bands that the guys bounce off of. You can't get to the other side, and no matter what you do, you're caught within this circle, and it's the energy that was cursed, placed, hexed upon you. You're not to have love. You're not to have money. You're not to have success. When everybody's talking about the law of attraction and all the spiritual stuff and how everybody's worthy of having attainment of things, some people are literally blackmailed that no matter what they do, they can't get out of this like a cyclone. They're stuck. It's not their fault.
No.
I really believe it's not everybody's fault.
And you use candles and things like that to help remove these curses.
I do. I was trained in 1999, and I was scared to death of it. I didn't understand it. I thought it was voodoo and witchcraft and negativity. And then I tried some candles, people's candles, and nothing happened. I tried others, and nothing happened. And then I met this one person who trained me with his family's ritual, and everything started happening, and he trained me because he knew that I was a psychic on radio and that I could reach more people to help them. So from the negative, I understood how people can generate more finances or abundance or to remove curses, jinxes, negativity, obstacles, or bring in love. I've seen people burn the candles, and after eight sets, maybe on the average, find their soulmate, and they're getting married. And they're still married.
Huh.
It really works.
It does work.
I'm doing one for a blind girl in Oklahoma right now. She can't do it because she can't see, but she's got vertigo. She doesn't sleep a full night, and she has muscle spasms in her legs. So she asked if I could help. So she retained me to do the work for her. I called her yesterday, George, just to check to see how she's doing, and she's no longer experiencing the vertigo upside down. She said she slept for 5 hours, four nights in a row.
That's big. That's good for her.
Watch. Yep. Checking her watch to make sure it was real. And she said she doesn't have to take her fingers to straighten out her toes right now. So the health and wellness is working. How it works is the magic. That's
right. I mean, I'm always wondering, is there a demon curse person out there, you know, on the other side whose sole responsibility is to implement curses?
That's an interesting concept. Like, we can't see it. Like, we know that we've got angels of light, and we probably have a little devil with a guy saying, okay, I'm going to go around and curse, and we can't see him. I'm sure there's the negative and positive, the yin and the yang of everything, but I don't know where it actually comes from. I don't think there's one little entity that says, I'm going to curse the world. I don't believe that there's really a devil, per se. But I know there's devilish activities, devilish thought, and we definitely see a lot of the rambunctiousness out there. But our job is to stay on top of it. We're survivors.
Well, when we come back, Linda, let's talk about individual curses. We'll talk about business curses, the Ouija board. You know, we just had a blood moon, and we've got more coming. Let's talk about that as well. Linda Salvin with us. Her website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com, but it is simply Linda Salvin, S-A-L-V, as in victory, I-N, .com. And she has a public phone number for you if you want to call and talk to her. Don't call her now. 1-888-888-509-1077. Back in a moment.